The title of my service today is, "And How Are the Children?" I hope this will make sense to you all once you've heard my reading, because the title of my reading is, "And How Are the Children?" This piece was written by Thomas P. O'Neill, and I downloaded it from the Unitarian Universalist website. Among the most accomplished and fabled tribes of Africa, no tribe was considered to have warriors more fearsome or more intelligent than the mighty Maasai. It is perhaps surprising then to learn the traditional greeting between Maasai warriors, Kasurian and Gera. One would say to another, and it means, "And how are the children?" It is still the traditional greeting among the Maasai, acknowledging the high value that the Maasai place on their children's well-being. Even warriors with no children of their own would always give the traditional answer, "All the children are well." Meaning, of course, that peace and safety prevail, that the priorities of protecting the young and the powerless are in place, that Maasai society has not forgotten its reason for being, its proper functions and responsibilities. "All the children are well" means that life is good. It means that the daily struggles for existence do not preclude proper caring for their young. I wonder how it might affect our consciousness of our own children's welfare if in our culture we took to greeting each other with this daily question, "And how are the children?" I wonder if we heard that question and passed it along to each other a dozen times a day, if we would begin to make a difference in the reality of how children are thought of or cared for in our own country. I wonder if every adult among us, parent and non-parent alike, felt an equal weight of the daily care and protection of all the children in our community, in our town, in our state, in our country. I wonder if we could truly say without hesitation, "The children are well. Yes, all the children are well." It would be like, what would it be like if the minister began every worship service by answering the question, "And how are the children?" If every town leader had to answer the question at the beginning of every meeting, "And how are the children? Are they all well?" Wouldn't it be interesting to hear their answers? What would it be like? I wonder. Let us pray. This prayer will be followed by a period of silence, which will be brought to a close by Josh and Mark with a piece called "Entering Silence." This will last about 8 minutes, so sit back and enjoy it when their time comes. The piece I've chosen to read for the prayer is "A Day in the Life." It's one of the tracks from the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper album, so "A Day in the Life." I read the news today, oh boy, about a lucky man who made the grade. And though the news was rather sad, well, I just had to laugh. I saw the photograph. He blew his mind out in a car. He didn't notice that the lights had changed. A crowd of people stood and stared. They'd seen his face before. Nobody was really sure if he was in the House of Lords. I saw a film today, oh boy. The English army had just won the war. A crowd of people turned away. But I just had to look, having read the book. I'd love to turn you on. Woke up, fell out of bed, dragged a comb across my head. Found my way downstairs and drank a cup. And looking up, I noticed I was late. Found my coat and grabbed my hat. Made the bus in seconds flat. found my way upstairs and had a smoke. And somebody spoke, and I went into a dream. I read the news today, oh boy, 4,000 holes in Blackburn, Lancashire. And though the holes were rather small, they had to count them all. Words from the Beatles.
Here are some times and ways to anchor your thoughts, to listen. Here now at a queue at the ATM. There is a gap for silence. As the barista creates for you. A new roadworks traffic light. These are gaps. They are gifts of silence. Moments of breath. Maybe try three sets at different times. Three breaths. Or five, maybe seven. And just pay close attention to each in-breath and each out-breath. A way to a little quiet inside. So try three, five, or seven and feel the length of the space and experience its depth. Silence shift something. And you can take silence in motion too. Walking, run, dance, yoga, swim or skip, or just clench your hand. Maybe wiggle a toe. But just give attention to the motion. And there might be a little less chatter in the space behind your eyes. And now the pause, the silence before and between. A pause before you reply, that silence. And the silence between two people looking into each other's eye. And the silence in a meeting without asking why. just take and recognize pauses. And try and accept that silence matters. And it gets better too. Pause when you put the kettle on. Or when you get up from a seat. When you step on a bus. You can try a one or a three breath here. It's in these that the pause and the silence become part of who you are and what you do. Read a book in a different room from your phone. Plan a deep read. Read a poem or a quote or a paragraph repeatedly. Take a nature silence. Experience a big favorite tree. The clouds or the stars, and experience the small too. Just feel some soil. Watch the working ants. Hold a blade of grass. And book yourself a silent time in your day. And turn up on time and go into silence. It can be a walk, it could be a journal, or just a sit. These are just some invitations to silence, an opening into that place that is you.
On a cold, dark day like today, it's easy to feel sad and downhearted and under the weather. The state of the world encourages negative feelings, depression, apathy. The political systems are moving rightward and towards authoritarianism. It's beginning to look as if democracy has failed or has ceased to work. The climate crisis has hit every part of the world. It seems that there isn't a speck of the surface of the earth that hasn't been hit by some climate irregularity in the past year or so. In the 1960s, the Beatles sang, "I read the news," and their rather bland response is, "Oh boy." Today, I don't read the news, I watch it on television. And there in my living room, in high definition, full color pictures, I see the stories of tragedies, war, rumors of war, see the full unvarnished truth of the human condition, See the violence, see the savagery, see the greed, the selfishness, the stupidity, and often the pain, the intense pain that people feel at the state of the world today. But I think it's important that we not give in to these feelings of despond, that we not imagine that we are helpless, that we do not imagine that there is nothing we can do. There is something we can do, even if it's just to say the prayer proposed by Master Eckhart in the Middle Ages and say, thank you, thank you. And notice some of the good things around us. Of course, if you want to go the whole hog, you can use the more modern words of E.E. Cummings. I thank you, God, for most this amazing day. If that doesn't bring a smile to your face or doesn't cheer you up just a tad, you need to read the whole poem and learn it all off by heart. Our first hymn this morning was, We'll Build a Land. It's a forward-looking, upbeat, optimistic hymn. But I think we need to change the words a bit. There's no point in this. We have gone beyond the stage where we say, we'll build a land, yes, when I feel like it, when the time is right, when I'm in the right mood, or even when there's no more sport on television. We can't put off building this new land. We have to start now. We need more sense of urgency. This need for a sense of urgency was brought home to me one day when I was in the church here, and we had an American visitor, a Unitarian Universalist from somewhere in America. I don't remember his name, and I don't remember where he came from, but I remember what he said. He asked the awkward question, what do people here believe? And I thought, well, actually, perhaps. This is a genuine Unitarian congregation, so there are a wide spectrum of beliefs here. There isn't any set standard form of belief, but we value freedom, reason, and tolerance, and we value the seven principles of Unitarian Universalism. And he looked at me and with a very sad expression on his face, and he shook his head and said, not good enough at all. And I thought, well, I didn't know what to make of this. I was totally shocked. I mean, first of all, I didn't feel this was appropriate for a guest in our church to say this, that this is not good enough. Who's he? Like, I think, I said, but the seven principles of Unitarian Universalism actually hold up well. It's very hard to argue with them. And he shook his head very sadly and looked at me as if I was totally stupid, which I don't like at all, I have to say. And I was beginning to get irritable, and I was wondering if I could just sort of encourage him out the door quickly. And he said, and I said, what's wrong with the seven principles of Unitarian Universalism? Oh, he said, pious words, nice words. There's pressure in the States, he said, to rewrite them. And I was shocked. Rewrite them? If you have something that works, why would you rewrite it? And so anyway, I took a deep breath and I said, what's wrong with the seven principles? And he said, oh, he said, isn't it obvious? Not enough verbs. And I thought, oh, I hadn't noticed. I thought there were plenty of verbs, but then what do I know? Obviously not enough. He said, in the world today, we need a statement of faith that is a call to action. Now, perhaps he's right about that. And I've been sort of thinking about this on and off since. And last week it came up again because Elaine was talking about putting freedom, reason, and tolerance into one of the panes in the Wilson window. She said that we should put our principles front and center of our worship. And then I was thinking, okay, freedom, reason, and tolerance. If I was going to rewrite that with verbs, where would I go? And there really isn't a nice way of putting it. When I was thinking about this, I was thinking, well, if you were to replace freedom, reason, and tolerance, what would I like to see in their place? Practice gratitude. Leave no one behind. That's the second one. And finally, perhaps shelter the insects. Now that does not sound like something that would trip off the tongue easily. So here's a challenge. Think about freedom, reason, and tolerance. And what would you put in their place with verbs in a poetic way that we can hold it in our minds as easily as three sort of slogany words? Is there a poetic way of expressing what we believe, what we feel, what we hold dear, that also acts as a call to action, a call to do something about the world? When we think about the future and look at the state of the world, obviously there are some big problems, and obviously most of us are not going to be able to fix it. In fact, I would say a lot of the problems in the world today won't be fixed in our generation. But that doesn't leave us off the hook. We need to do what we can. We need to be positive and optimistic, that focus on the good things in life, but not give up on the actions we can take. I think where the future is most hopeful is if we go about our day-to-day lives with the question in our hearts, and how are the children? If we go through our day-to-day life with a thought for how we're looking after the children, we may shade our actions just a little in the direction of positive change. But also, we'll be giving the world a chance, because if we really care for, nurture, encourage, and educate the next generation, there is just a chance that in perhaps 100 years or more, our spiritual descendants will be in this place, and when they are asked the question, and how are the children, they will be able to answer truthfully and heartfeltly, the children are well. Yes, all the children are well. That must be our hope for the future.